Well, good afternoon, everyone. I'm Rob Lustran from Reed Smith. Glad that everyone could stay for our panel. I have the distinct pleasure and honor of being on the stage with Robert Bugbee of Scorpio fame, who we all know very, very well. Thank you, Robert, for being here with me today. And I'd like to also to thank the Capital Link team for having us here. You know, Robert's been at the forefront of the shipping world for a number of years now. But it's interesting. I was looking at the subject matter for today's conference, and this is a one-on-one leadership interview. And it got me thinking that Robert is a perfect person to speak about leadership in the shipping industry and tell us a little bit about his path. I used to come to these conferences and see lots of gray-haired individuals in the audience, and today I'm really seeing a generational change. We're seeing many younger folks, and a very wise person once told me that if you're a younger person and you want to seek success, you should emulate the success of those that have done it before you. And so I find it to be a perfect opportunity for Robert to share with us a little bit about his journey and what he can share with some of the younger folks in the room and shed some wisdom on moving ahead. So, Robert, with that, you've been at the forefront throughout your career of technological advances, really. I mean, just about every gig that you've had, you have faced some sort of technological change in the shipping industry. And I'd be interested to hear your thoughts on the challenges that are going on today and what you feel coming from the top down, you know, in a leadership role, really you can help us to understand what needs to happen within the confines of an organization such as Scorpio to get that done. What type of commitment is needed both internally and externally, and also how you keep both your staff and Wall Street analysts and others that are watching you focused on the mission.
Okay.
It's a big question.
It's a big question. The technical side has always challenged me because, if I'm honest, I'm really not interested in technical side at all, and I understand even less. I'm so disinterested in machinery that I didn't get my driving license until I was 37, and didn't take my didn't have my first lesson until I was 35, and that was forced on me when I came to the United States. But I have been involved in many of the decisions of change. So back at Goddard Larsen, we had to move to double hull. We also invested in the first sort of petroyale vessels in the offshore. In OMI, we moved further into double hull, and obviously in Scorpio Tankers, we have the eco engines and the systems and all the propellers, etc. What I've had to do is to surround myself or be involved with people on the technical side who really are proficient, who really love the technical side of shipping, and were able to somehow convince someone like myself in very simple ways why something would work. And sometimes that was fairly hard. The eco ships were sort of was not 101 engineering to begin with. But as long as the team is good enough and strong enough and they do enough research, the actual decision process becomes pretty self-evident, because unlike trying to guess whether a tanker market is going to be stronger in a year or lower in a year, most of all the engineering, you actually have really reliable empirical testing and data to be convinced from. The hardest challenge is normally the capital market side, because nearly all new innovation, by definition, requires a capital cost that you don't get a return on immediately. And if I was to look back on my career, if it were possible, I would not have necessarily wanted to be a first mover. The first mover is quite a cost. You're out there taking a risk. in a industry and that Wall Street and investors don't really like to pay for tomorrow's benefit today. So one of the biggest challenges is if you have to build a new vessel or a new engine form, is trying to convince somebody that, you know what, you have to put equity down today and you're not going to get a single dollar of return for maybe 2 or 3 years' time.
And I can see that. But again, like keeping the analysts focused on what your thesis is, I assume that when you go into a project, such as when you started Scorpio, I mean, that was to much fanfare in the press, you had one of the largest new building orders just about ever, certainly probably the largest new building
orders
of products tankers that anyone had ever done.
But we had friends. We had the largest shipbroking house in the world, and the most knowledgeable analyst is his Clarksons, who were 100% in our corner. And they weren't the broker by any means on every one of these new buildings, but their equity side and their research side backed us to the hilt in what we were doing. And they were able to help us explain to investors, help us to raise money, and help us to overcome the usual hurdles. And for us, it was very important. At that time, we believed that the shipping markets couldn't continue with these undercapitalized companies. So right from the beginning, it was basically an attitude of go big or go home.
Yeah. And now you were talking about having the right team around you, the technical people that had a passion for what you were doing. How do you build a team like that? How do you go about sourcing those around you that both have the expertise and also that you feel make a good fit within your organization?
Well, the first thing you're looking at in building a team internally is to, you know, not have people that have great knowledge but don't have great egos. People that are older and experienced that enjoy mentoring. I mean, I've been very lucky in my career. From a very early time, I've had the benefit of fantastic mentors. And in all facets, whether it was the first time I was ever in a shipping company, the first time I did finance, first time I did a public equity market, I even had the benefit at the age of 25 of Peter Lynch going through my investor presentations and critiquing them. I mean, that's not a bad person to have doing that. And you start with that. So you start by looking for leaders who are passionate in their skill set, are respectful of other people's skill sets, and above all, want to actually make younger people better at what they do.
Yeah, that's actually quite logical. Thank you for that. So now turning externally a little bit, analysts are, you know, kind of in a little bit of a quandary between looking short-term for short-term gain and trying to come up with, say, for example, a price target for the securities versus being, being consistent with your long-term outlook and showing a commitment to your business model and your thesis. How do you manage that short-term versus long-term dichotomy when you are trying to manage from the top?
It all depends what your balance sheet's like. And I mean that honestly. Sometimes the jest is because it's really serious, is that if your balance sheet is strong, you have the luxury of managing for the long term and frankly not giving a damn what the analysts think in the short term. And I mean saying that in a very blunt way, but that becomes the reality. If it's the opposite way around, and I've been in both, if your balance sheet's weak in a weak market, you've got to, just understand that the long term is irrelevant unless you make it through the short term.
Yeah. So how much commitment do you put into? So you have obviously a very both loyal and expert staff within your company. They're helping you. I mean, obviously, you have quite good skills yourself, but they're helping you with the metrics, how to analyze certain projects as well as what's going on economically, out there in the marketplace. When investment bankers come into you to sell you a deal, how do you determine debt versus equity and really which way to go? So, it's very possible that someone may be trying to sell a deal to you, in the capital markets deal, that may be a preferred stock or something more debt-driven or pseudo-debt-driven. How do you determine which way to go there? Do you really trust what the third parties are bringing to you? And how do you integrate that with the advice you're getting internally from your finance staff?
You always start with your own staff. You generally have a view anyway of where you want to be. If an investment banker is coming in with a deal, you can almost 90% of the time, if it doesn't fit what you want to do, kill it on the spot. And 10% of the time you can go, yeah, we're looking at that, okay. We get that, but deals come from wherever you can come from very unexpected areas. I've done a lot of M&A transactions, and some come from the company, some from come directly, and you need to have an investment banker to put the deal together. And others can come from an investment banker. It's all over the place.
So you thought I was going to ask you about scrubbers, didn't you?
I think I've revealed enough that a scrubber question wouldn't get us very far. But I think to go back to analysts, to follow that question is that I think analysts have the hardest job in the industry, to be honest, because their challenges of having, put it in their books, the difference between the short term and the long term, and they've got, they can get off a phone call from a guy who, is focused on one thing and then on to the next thing, that can be a challenge at times.
So what do you think would be the best advice you can give a young person who aspires to reaching the successes that you've had? you're at the top of the industry here. So what do you think?
What I have done, and I've noticed that it helps, is I think the key ingredient to shipping is you just have to love it. It doesn't matter what side you are. You just have to love it. And if you love it, the chances of you creating success is very high. So one piece of advice that I gave a youngster who interned with us, I don't know what it was, but we ended up saying to that youngster, go away, spend 3, 4, 5 months traveling the world, then see if you actually really want to do shipping.
So we don't have that much time left.
I think you can start from anywhere. I mean, I started from post fixture chartering assistant trainee. I mean, I don't even think they have that. It's basically telex boy running telexes around the place. So today it's hard to run a email around or text message around. So you can do it. But what was so essential, the advice I'd say to the youngster once they know they have a passion for the industry, is make sure they're working with people who want to help you. Right, who are good mentors, because if you're not, you need to just get out of there.
Now, we haven't spoken much over the years, but, your fashion sense has changed a little bit from when we first observed you in the market. I have this...
It's only because it's cold outside.
I have this article from 2014 where you are quoted as saying, "You can see that I am a fashionable dresser. Being in the forefront of fashion is ultimately beneficial."
Yep.
I was wondering if you still feel that's true, because I see you're...
I've changed, because I have a jacket and tie on, which I think is the first time I've ever worn a jacket and tie, and I'm not actually looking to raise equity. I think that's a sign that I'm growing up, perhaps.
Maybe so. I just thought it's because you have a lawyer interviewing you. So you.
No.
Anyway, I want to
thank. No, I have my own lawyer in the room. So.
I want to thank you for.
Appreciate it.
With us. That was really, I think, very informative. And I hope some of the younger folks out in the audience learned a few things that'll help them along. So thank you to Nicholas and the entire Capitol.
Thank you.
And we'll turn it back over.